was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound.
Switching gears here for the second half of our Outdoor Living Hour here in this fifth Saturday of May. We're going to have a guest who was on with us earlier this year when we had another five-week month, Noelle Johnson, also known as Arizona Plant Lady. And if you follow along in our home maintenance calendar, we have Desert Harvest as our topic for this week. And we're talking about all the things in the desert that you can grow and eat. Noelle, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, it's interesting when you look out over the desert, and it could seem pretty bare, pretty dry, not a lot going on, but you know, the desert has supported human life for over 5,000 years.
Yes, it has. And one of the unique things about the Sonoran Desert is if you've had the chance to visit deserts in other parts of the world and in our country, you'll notice that there are more varied plant species in the Sonoran Desert than any other desert in the world. And the reason for this is that most deserts have one main rainy season. But here we have two. We have winter and summer.
And so that provides us with a wider variety of plants.
Yes.
And what makes the Sonoran Desert? There's three specific plants, correct?
Well, there are three specific plants, but, you know, they're mixed in with hundreds of others. But if we look at it, you're going to see the Palo Verde trees. There are several different species, but the one that you're going to see growing most often in the desert is called a foothill or a little leaf Palo Verde. And we also have prickly pear. We have barrel cactus. We have saguaros, ocotillo. We have just an abundance.
So obviously, the saguaro, you can't eat that. It's got our Arizona state flower. It's a protected species. But what about some of these?
If it's on your property, you can eat the fruit.
If it's on the property, okay, you can eat the fruit.
Yes. Or if you have a friend who has several saguaro on their property, ask him if you can harvest some of the fruit.
And driving around this last couple of weeks, all of those fruits are about to bloom. Some of them have already started, and there's this beautiful white flower. There's going to be parts of Arizona just going to look like a snow-capped saguaro right in the middle of the summer, and it's all our Arizona state flowers in bloom.
It is, and it's so fun to see that. And then you'll notice later in June that the fruits, you know, the flowers have been pollinated, and they form these little green fruits, and then the fruits burst open, and they're red, and you'll see the birds going crazy. But you can actually harvest those fruits before they split open if you have a very long pole, and you can knock them off.
Once we have them knocked off, what do we do with them then? Do you just eat them, or do you use them in a salad? Do you boil them down and make a jam? I mean, what do you do with them at that point?
Well, we want to think of these, it's a fruit. So once you have the green fruit, you're going to use a knife. You're going to just cut it open in the middle, and you're going to scoop out the inside. And the inside is red, and it has lots of seeds in it. Now, you can use that to create a jam, or you can dry it and make like a fruit leather out of it.
You know, that's the second time I've heard fruit leather on this broadcast in as many weeks. Have you ever had fruit leather, Gary?
I never have. Is that like a fruit roll-up?
I bet you have. If you've had fruit roll-up,
that
is fruit leather.
Okay, a fruit equivalent to what we would see as a fruit roll-up, fruit leather. Now, aside from the saguaro and having an extremely long pole or tall extension ladder to get up and knock them off, let's go to a simpler one, prickly pear. That's when you don't need a ladder, and you can, out in the wild, harvest the prickly pear.
Yeah. Now, to do this, you want a pair of tongs. Now, they don't have to be fancy tongs. You can, you know, use kitchen tongs, you know, that you use with your pasta. And so you want an inexpensive pair of tongs because you do not want to touch the fruit. The fruit and most prickly pears are covered with these little tiny spines. They're called glochids, and they very easily dislodge into your skin.
It looks like fur, but when you touch it, you'll be itching for hours.
It does not feel like fur. Oh, my goodness. No. So you want to use tongs to harvest the fruit, and it's going to start to turn red, and that's when you know it is ready. And again, the fruit, this is probably the most popular edible fruit, I think, that you find in the Sonora Desert, and probably that most people have heard of. But again, the fruit inside, it is very sweet and tart, and it is red, and it is filled with seeds as well. But, you know, you've got this little prickly pear fruit, and you're not allowed to touch it, so what are you going to do? So this is when you want to have a blowtorch, and, you know, they have the ones that for kitchen use, and you can just burn off those glochids very easily and then rinse off your fruit before you cut into it.
And I've seen the petals for sale. Now, you can't just go out and cut the petals off, but they are edible as well if you've got a prickly pear on your own property.
Yes. And, you know, you can even use the petals to garnish a nice plate or a drink or something like that.
And, again, the petal is going to have thousands of thorns on it as well. Will that torch work on those longer thorns?
It should work. If not, you can use a knife to scrape them off. If it does not, but usually the fruit itself does not have the long thorns.
It just has those little tiny ones. What did you call them?
They're called glochids.
Glochids.
So glochids. It's a fancy word you can use to impress your friends.
The glochid. And this isn't really on an edible side, but the aloe vera plants. I mean, if you have one of those by itself and you get a sunburn, just cutting off an arm of that, splicing it open and rubbing it straight onto your skin works 10 times better than any aloe lotion you could buy in the store.
It does, but, you know, there's several kinds of aloe, and only one species is suitable for that to work. Other ones don't work that way. So the species you want is aloe vera or aloe barbadensis, and it's a larger aloe, and it gets the yellow blooms in late winter into spring. That's the one that's good for burns.
And you can get those at a lot of local plants and nurseries, garden centers around the state.
Yes.
You just want to make sure you're looking for that one specifically for burn. We have a couple planted just for backup. we try and stay pretty well covered, but, you know, it's a long summer and it's a big sun, and someone gets burned at least once a year.
Oh, absolutely. You know, years ago I worked for a company that owned golf courses, and by the kitchen, you know, because they had a restaurant there, so by the kitchen they had an aloe vera plant growing, and so the chefs knew where it was, and they would run out and grab it whenever any of them got a burn.
Now, what about Mormon tea? I hear about that a lot, but I have never, the smell of it by itself on the plant has never made me want to say, I wonder, I should try and chew on that.
Oh, I know. You know, Mormon tea is a very, it's a green, spiky shrub that you will see in the desert, and it is native. So it has a bitter flavor. And it can be roasted and ground into a powder, and sometimes it can be used to make a bread or mush. That doesn't sound too appetizing, but people have used it to make a tea, a hot tea, and they use it by steeping the green leaves in the water. But it tastes better if you kind of roast those stems a little bit first.
All in the prep work.
It is.
Now, the earliest, according to the research I have done and seen, the earliest signs are archaeological evidence of human farming in Arizona along the Santa Cruz River, dating back over 5,000 years. Any idea what they were farming and growing then?
Well, you know, another native species that is very nutritious are mesquite trees. And so there's several different types, but the one we find here that is native is called a velvet mesquite. And so many of us in our landscapes, we have these big, huge, giant mesquite trees. Most of those come from South America, and they do great here. But the ones that were here long ago and are still here have very nutritious pods. They're seed pods. You know, the things that we cursed because they make a mess in our landscape, they're actually incredibly very nutritious, and we use them to make a flour. And people do it nowadays, and the flour can be used for baking. So you can make things from pancakes and waffles to cakes and cookies using mesquite flour.
And we'll have Farmer Greg in at the fourth week in June talking about how you can do that. And they even have a mesquite mill. You could pick your mesquite pods and bring it to them to mill. I know that there is a mill in Tucson that's open for public use as well, that if you've got a property with a number of mesquite trees on it, you can take those beans, get them ground, and turn them into flour. Basically, flour, you know, get it in a clear, put it in a glass jar. It'll last you a long time.
It'll last. It's high in protein, which is also important. And you can also mix it with other flours. And you can make breads with it. You can really have fun and experiment with it. So, yeah, and yes, there are mesquite milling events throughout the Southwest, usually in June.
More with Noelle Johnson, the Arizona plant lady, here at Rosie on the House, right after this.